Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM ESPN, or 680 AM, but you can always stay up to date with everything going on here at 92.9 FM ESPN with the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. All you have to do is download the Odyssey app, and you can search and subscribe to 92.9 FM ESPN. You can listen to all of our live content whenever, wherever you may be. You can also even go back and rewind some segments if you miss something you want to go back and listen. So it's all right there on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company today, as he is each and every Monday on the program, is, of course, the head coach and the team director of Team Thad, the Nike EYBL program on Twitter, on X, at Dream Big Herd. Coach Norton Herd the Fourth. Good day, sir.
Great day. Great week, Jeff.
What a weekend. What a weekend. There is so much to get to, so we'll start with some overreactions from the weekend. Also, next segment, Tiger basketball has officially begun practice. We will have Jason Munns join us as he does each and every Monday. He'll let us know everything that's going on with the Tiger basketball program right now as they get ready for their first exhibition, which of course will be a week from tomorrow night, I believe, down at FedEx Forum when they take on North Carolina. We will also get into the list. We have found the we have found the Woj replacement. It indeed will be Shams. We'll talk about that with ESPN. We'll get into a few other, perhaps, stories. Talk about whether or not the big Tiger football game this week. So it's supposed to be on Friday. There's a hurricane down in South Florida, at least perhaps approaching South Florida. South Florida has shut down all on-campus activity through at least Thursday. So lots to get to as the Tigers will have another big football game, but whether or not that game gets moved, whether that game that gets relocated, the date changes, all that is very much on the table. So we'll discuss that, get into a few other takes from the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think first, let's start, Herd, with when you have a weekend like that, where you start off with a Saturday in which you have all of the upsets that we see. It concludes on late Sunday morning with the Miami Hurricanes putting the Heisman on being the next team to get upset by an unranked team. Then you have an NFL day in which it felt like the witching hour, the 2 to 3 o'clock time when games just flip on their heads. It felt like yesterday's was insane. Then we got into the afternoon portion, and it kind of felt like, all right, some of this stuff's making sense. We've got the Niners controlling the game against the Cardinals. We got a tie game between the Seahawks and the Giants, but it feels like the Seahawks are going to kind of figure it out. The Giants will turn into a pumpkin again. We had the Rams kind of being frisky at first. We had a bad interception from Jordan Love, but then it felt like the Packers were taking control. You're like, okay, well, that's now starting to make some sense. Yeah, the blowout in the Denver Raiders game, and really the biggest takeaway from that is, why did the Broncos ever change their jerseys? Like, those jerseys are just so much better when they wear those old school orange with royal blue. And then we get into Sunday Night Football. We have the long rain delay, and it looks like that the Cowboys are going to have the type of loss that is just another maddening Cowboys loss. You outgain the Steelers by what it felt like you doubled them up in yardage. Yet you have a couple of crucial red zone turnovers. Then you have a pick when it feels like the Cowboys are trying to just take over and establish like that they're going to win that game, put that game away, and then Dak throws a head scratching pick. Yet here they go. They get all the way down and they figure out a way to win the game on fourth down after perhaps figuring out a way to lose the game, or maybe two ways to lose the game. Just a nuts day. So like, and then we had playoff baseball involved with that. We had the Tigers opening practice for both the men's and women's teams with the event at El Marrone Fieldhouse. It always just feels like when you have those kinds of weekends that there's so much. So for you, I'll ask you first, when you think about like what was the biggest thing this weekend, where does your mind go?
when you think first, I think you said it. I go straight to how many upsets it was in the NCAA college football, and then I go straight to Miami, which with them, you know, outside of me being a fan, with them playing in Cali, the game wasn't over. It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and I felt like that led the foundation as you went into Sunday.
Yeah.
And Sunday was a real, like you say, really, really good weekend because, you know, the college had been killing it
the
last 3 weeks. And I think far as depth from how many good games from college, NFL, I feel like that was the most depth we didn't had in a weekend with football so far.
Yeah, I'm with you. It felt like it was the best Saturday and Sunday back-to-back that we've had. And I do think you're right, because I think this is going to be an interesting question. For those that have largely just been college football fans, this is such a different world of what you're watching, because the thought of Alabama playing one of the, you know, one of the best, having one of the best wins we've seen in a long time when they beat Georgia in the fashion they beat Georgia. And then you turn right around and you lose to Vanderbilt. And it really wasn't that fluky. Like, Vanderbilt gets a pick six and Vanderbilt recovers a fumble. But the big thing that really stood out to me was when you were watching that game, normally if I would see Alabama fall behind like that, I'd immediately just rush to go and live bet Alabama to win the game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the game's going to have enough possessions, whatnot. They're gonna wind up winning this game. But there was something about the way that they could not get off the field. Vanderbilt was able to do what they wanted on offense. Now, Alabama was able to do it for the most part what they wanted to do on offense too. So it wasn't like, oh, Vanderbilt's being dominant. But the fact that they weren't able to get off the field, like, to me, that really spoke to what we were watching. And then you combine it with the way that Tennessee looked, in which in the first half they looked like they couldn't really do anything. Then it felt like they took control of the game. And you're like, all right, Tennessee's going to put this one away. The question will be, how much do they win by? But they'll put this one away. And then they don't. And then Arkansas's quarterback gets hurt. And you're like, well, okay, this is Tennessee's going to catch a break. But sometimes that's what you need to escape. And they still couldn't do it. And to me, this is something that if you're a bigger NFL fan or you've watched more NFL football than you have college football, it's something that you at least understand more easily, in that the differences between the great teams and the pretty good teams has shrunk. And oftentimes it can start to be a week-to-week league. And I think also when you factor in now, I know everyone says that, like, you know, the way teams are coached and whatnot, like, I'm setting all that aside. Like, I don't think teams are not being coached hard enough. I don't think players are not playing hard enough. I just know how sports works. When you know a loss is not going to be the end of your season, there's just this inherent, you don't have the hunger. Like, you're not as desperate. And I think we're going to see a little bit more of that. But then it brings up an interesting question with Miami, because another thing I think we started to see last year, for the most part, the teams that were actually in college football, the teams that were considered the true contenders, they were mainly only losing to themselves. And Alabama loses to Texas. Georgia loses to Alabama. Michigan didn't lose. Washington didn't lose. But when Oregon was in it, Oregon's only loss was to Washington. But we started to see those teams would kind of separate. And with Miami, there's this weird question for me of, okay, they are starting to play with fire a little bit. Should they be knocked for that? Or could I look at it from the other side? Well, we're watching other teams that play with fire, and Miami's not losing. Mm. Like, should we credit that? Because, like, that's that weird thing where it was the same thing I felt like that happened with Missouri this weekend, where Missouri has not passed the eye test. And all of a sudden, but they were still winning. But then you see them on Saturday get popped the way that they did. And now it leads you to believe, like, okay, well, maybe our eyes were right about Missouri, but at the same time, it's like we play sports, we keep score for a reason. Like at a certain point, it makes it I think it makes it difficult to assess with Miami, because should they get credit for winning these games, or should we sit there and go, man, I don't know. Like, you play with enough fire. Like, yeah, you can beat Cal. Maybe you can beat Virginia Tech. But, like, can you do that against Clemson? It's like, I don't know. Like, at a certain point, it's like, I think you should receive credit for not losing.
Yeah, we definitely can. We should at the end of it. Like, Miami, I think they should easily be top three or four this morning due to how many teams lost. But like you said, Jeff, with the way we're winning, I don't think it's getting fully respected by the voting committee. I feel like they're looking at it like, y'all shouldn't have had to do all that to win. I'm for real, because to me, I feel like it's coming like that. But it's like you said, at least we won the game. And what have your coach been preaching? You've been around sports your whole life. You didn't play. Most coaches say a win is a win.
Yes.
Even if you win by half a point.
And to me, like, this is another, like, an adage that we see in the NFL where it's like, you'll see coaches that will take a breath, and they were in a game. They were in a dogfight in a game they didn't think they were going to be in a dogfight in, but they come away with a win. And it's like, winning is hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, that's a struggle that I currently have with Miami, because then there's also this other part of the equation. Okay, yeah, they're winning close on these last two games. They were not winning close before that, by the way. And I think it also begs the questions like, well, why do they get into these games and why are they winning? And to me, it's a very simple answer. Their quarterback's better than pretty much everybody else's quarterback.
For sure, for sure. Cam Ward is definitely a top three Heisman. I think him, Travis Hunter, and the Boise State running back, to me, are my kind of clear top three right now, Shador and some other guys. But to lead back to everything you said, Jeff, Alabama, that got to be one of the wildest two-week turnarounds maybe in the history of college football. When you beat Georgia, let's be real, you were beating them in such bad form that it made the coach look like it was the right decision, because Coach Saban hadn't been beating them that convincingly the last few. You know what I mean?
No, like, when you're up 28-0, that's a different thing than we beat Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how we were embarrassing Georgia. And then I do think, like, it's almost like the way that Georgia was able to come back, and I told you, like, I did find myself weirdly feeling okay about Georgia, the way that they were able to come back. But normally what we see is when a team lets go of the rope and lets a team back in it and then falls behind, like, that team usually doesn't make the play to win the game. Well, Alabama did.
They did. They did.
And they made several plays. I mean, Williams makes the big catch, and then they get the stop on defense.
They get the pick. No, I agree with that. Like, so I didn't tell you this, Jeff. Last week, I had been watching so many games. I was hyped by that. I'm on Twitter. I'm on something. I thought somebody, you know, everybody likes to troll these days. I hear somebody saying, Alabama beating the mess out of Georgia. I'm like, the game just started. So I cut it on. It's like 14-0, 21. I'm like, what just happened here?
It was like there was no answer. It was just like, as soon as Alabama got the ball, you're like, well, they're going to go score.
Yeah, yeah. So it was that. But I think, like you saw from the second half, in Missouri, you right, wasn't looking right. This team wasn't looking good. Tennessee always so talented, but you expect them to drop a game. I think what we talk about in the NFL, Jeff, is separate from – because this is the thing. Wanting to win a loss or two getting you in the playoffs, I think there's still no excuse to Vanderbilt beating Alabama. You know what I mean? I think that's just a lack of when Vanderbilt is getting better. I saw Vanderbilt play Virginia Tech earlier this year, and I was like, why is Virginia – that's why I was so mad when Virginia Tech was finna beat us. I'm like, hold on, this is a team just lost to Vanderbilt, right? And so I think guys still got to handle their business. I think Vanderbilt, to me, that might be that's the greatest win in their school history. I've seen Skip Bayless, a bunch of other guys. And to me, Vanderbilt was the team that you thought was an automatic win. But I think, unlike the NFL, where the defenses have been better this year,
yeah,
I actually think outside of 2-3 college teams, the defense not that good this year. People are putting up points. The better teams are putting up points quick and in large margins this year.
So I'm with you. I think it's where, it's a little out of sight, out of mind. To me, the key difference, and I think what we saw with a Vanderbilt, to your point, which is when you watch Vanderbilt play this year, you, at least I am struck by, on offense particularly, they look the part more than they normally do. Like, normally when you watch even, like, high-level Vanderbilt, you're just sitting there going, okay, they're mismatched, but they're kind of smoke and mirroring it. The thing that was so amazing to me is when it came time to put the game away, like, they were able to run the ball on Alabama, and to me it also shows, like, if you want to combine it with Miami, Diego Pavia is not going to be an NFL quarterback. Like, he doesn't, but it, there's a, there's occasionally guys like this in college where you're like, the guy's just a gamer, and he's a problem for other defenses. And it shows when you have a quarterback, it's the same thing with Miami. It's like, I'm not really sure that this Miami team is that much more talented than they were last year. But the key difference to me is Cam Ward is playing and Tyler Van Dyke's not.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cristobal said something about that. He was like, Cam Ward, you know, because this is his first stretch as the head coach there. I think this is his third year. But he said, Cam Ward didn't just make us better on the field. He gave us the, a swagger.
And
he,
that's the same thing Diego's done with Vanderbilt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He didn't give it. Now, this is where your evaluation is better than mine, and maybe.
But I want to get back to your defensive point. So I think what the key difference to me is, the great defenses, it was basically at the line of scrimmage. And Alabama, Georgia, or at times like LSU, Ohio State, and really even last year with Michigan. Basically, like, all those teams that had the great defenses just stockpiled all of the defensive line talent. And I think what we're seeing now is nobody has the depth across the board at the defensive line where they just stockpile it, except for one team that we haven't really paid attention to since the Michigan game. It's like, it's why right now the only SEC team that I really trust is Texas, because to me, when you look at Texas up front, you're like, oh yeah, that's the team that has the dudes that are problems.
I can see that. And then and you know what? I don't know, we like to always keep saying this, but the portal is probably making people not wait as much, Jeff. Like you say, stockpile. Like Alabama and Georgia will have like,
yes,
7-8 guys, and the 7th guy might be a pro, but he's willing to only take limited snaps. I think guys are not doing that anymore. Like, they're like, oh, I'm gonna go here and get more NIL and actually start and play, and then I come back to you, Georgia, Alabama, once you ready to start a junior. You know what I mean?
Well, to your very point, Jaheim Otis is a junior at Bama, and he's not playing right now, or he's not getting amounts of playing time, defensive tackle. Well, he's going to now redshirt, and he's going to transfer. And to me, like, I think when everyone wants to do the portal has made parity, it's such a broad take that there's some truth to it. What I will be curious to see is in the 12-team world, what I do think has been true, and I think it's been true for a while, the teams that are like 6th through 40th, there's not a lot of difference. Sometimes it was quarterback play. More times than not, it was who was healthy that week. Mm-hmm. When do you play someone? Are you playing somebody that hasn't had a great year, but all of a sudden they got back healthy and that was a bad spot to play them? Like, stuff that you would see in the NFL. But what I am very curious about is, can you be one of those teams that's in like that 6 to 12 range? Can those teams actually win the title? Because what we started to see the last couple of years was those teams could sneak up and beat somebody, but in a 4-team world, they just didn't have enough consistency. Maybe they didn't have enough depth. They were never able to put the whole season together to compete for a title. Well, now you don't have to put the whole season together. 10-2 could get you in. Maybe we'll see 9-3. Who knows? I mean, I think there's going to need to be some chaos, and I think like anything, it depends on what are those 9 wins, what are those 3 losses. But what I do think is clear is that we have more teams in that range that are quality teams, and that's 100% a byproduct of the portal. But can you still be a national champion by being a portal team? And that's what's unclear to me. And maybe this era makes it maybe this era makes it easier because now you just have to be hot. Like, you'll be the NFL team that gets healthy at the right time. And maybe you weren't the best team, but you got healthy, you got hot, and you put a run together. My suspicion, though, is we're still going to see some version of Ohio State, Texas, maybe Miami, and maybe Bama, Georgia. Like, it's going to be those are the title teams. But that's the whole thing. It's like, I don't know. Like, I think what a lot of college football fans are struggling with is you've spent your whole lifetime kind of having this hierarchy and realizing, like, well, these teams are always going to be good. Now I think a lot of the top part of the sport has been brought down a little bit, and I think the middle part of the sport's been raised up a decent amount. But there's still a question to me of can kind of that 5th through 10th team actually win a national title? Because what we have seen, even in the playoff era, really the BCS era, those teams can have unbelievable seasons, but when it comes time to win a national championship, it's the same thing, like, to me with Washington last year. You saw once they actually, like, yes, Washington popped Texas, but, like, once they had to go up against Michigan, it's like they couldn't get both Texas and Michigan. We saw it with TCU. TCU popped Michigan, but then when they had to play Georgia, they couldn't pop both. Like, is one of those teams that's probably not top to bottom the roster that the elite teams are, is that team capable of actually putting it together to win a title?
Like you said, I think it can happen, but them top four or five teams, like you say, always be tougher. I think when you're 5th through 12th, not only do you got to have the right game plan and you got to also be just as good, I think with that extra game, you know, the health going to mean a lot. You know, because when they first expanded it, I was cool with them doing it slowly, like 4-6, 6-8. I thought 8 would actually be the max. When we get to the point where, like, you got buys the first round and stuff, and it's like 5 games. Because also on the flip side, and I guess money overrules everything, I was reading reports about, like, that wasn't healthy or whatever to play, like, that many games outside of, you know, for college students. So that's what I thought. You know,
I think that talking point went away when guys started getting paid above board. You know what I mean? You're 100%
right. How much money these schools going to make off of this too, right?
It's going to be
crazy. Because I think first round is at your home or something.
So if you're 5 will play 12, 6 will play 11, 7 will play 10, 8 will play 9. Those games will be the better seeded team that's a home game.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do you realize that's almost like having, like we do when Memphis played the Liberty Bowl. Like, that's going to be like a crazy, crazy bowl game. And so
we're talking, I mean, just to your point, like, I would imagine the average SEC team is going to make probably somewhere, you know, if you're hosting, you probably make $10 to $12 million at least just to have another home game.
Something that we want a year here just to get to a good lead or whatever. But so with your point, Jeff, I think at the right time you got to be on, and if everyone to stay healthy, especially like you say with the portal and guys not overstacking. But I do think one of the top 6 teams for the first few years are probably going to win it.
Yeah, and I think also though, the other thing it reminded me of. It is fun to have these kind of moments again. Like, yeah, Vanderbilt can't win a national title, but how long has it been since we realistically thought Vanderbilt could play Alabama and reasonably win the game?
When was the last time that happened? It's 40 years?
1984.
So you're talking like 40 years, right?
This 40 years on the nose.
That's pretty big.
I mean, it's the first time that I think it was like, they were 0-60 against top 5 teams prior to that.
Yeah, I don't remember even beating anybody in like the top 30. I've been watching Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
but I liked it. Like James Franklin kind of had a stretch where he went like 7-4, and people thought that was for Vanderbilt standards, it was like the greatest thing that ever happened. It kind of made him a very
high. No, it was considered like a golden age of Vanderbilt football.
Yes, it was. And so, man, I'm really impressed with what Vanderbilt's doing. And what I was going to say earlier was, your evaluation is better than mine, because maybe I shouldn't disrespect Vandy like this, but even when they line up, when I see black and gold, I don't think you're that good. And I think I'm gonna say I don't think you SEC good. My
no, Vanderbilt should not have a roster that matches up with Alabama. But they again, it was really only one side of the ball because Alabama on offense basically could do what they wanted. Mm-hmm. They made the two mistakes that allowed that game to be what it was, which is they throw a pick six on a tip ball and they have a bad fumble. Well, that's if. By the way, if Vanderbilt's going to beat Alabama, they do need those two plays.
For sure.
But what was less fluky about it was the way that Vanderbilt was able to just control the football. And, like, to me, like, that's where you sit there and you go, like, that's the microcosm of this is what the portal has done. It has allowed a team, a school like Vanderbilt, to flip its roster basically overnight. I think it's 51 new guys from last year. And they can have a roster that, yes, they have to have a great day. Things have to go their way. But it wasn't that insane. You know what I mean?
No. I get it. And like you say, the man, just kudos to Vanderbilt for what they did, because the coaching, the belief. You know, at some point when you lose a lot, think about certain NFL teams, no matter who come to it. Like, not to disrespect John or whatever, we play a lot, but like, it just feel like whoever goes to the Raiders right now is not going to be good. Whoever goes to the Detroit Pistons right now.
The Jets.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. And so for Vandy to even be able to believe, do you can imagine how much doubt? And then, side note, Jeff, I thought about this as being a coach. Do you know that 2 weeks for the new coach of Alabama has to be crazy? Because at one point people were saying, thank God he didn't lose that Georgia game, because people were like, oh, we got the right man. That's all I hear. You know, we love Saban, but we think he's finna, you know, even be hard on offense. And to the next, probably one of the biggest losses in the school history, I think that's unique, not in a good way.
I'm with you, because I was racking my brain. We were watching it. I was doing a live stream with my old boss, and there came a point where you realize, like, this is going to happen. And then you're starting to, like, I was trying to rack my brain. I cannot think of another example in sports where a new coach or however, new quarterback, whatever, some clear, because it's different in college. Like, in college, the coach is the brand, mm-hmm. for the most part.
Yeah.
But, like, in the NFL, more times than not, it's the quarterback or whatnot. Like, coaching matters. We know that. But they're not, there's a reason why the quarterback is paid five times what the coach is paid. Mm-hmm. And that's different in college. But I can't think of something, an example, where you go from 1 week having everyone go, replacing the legend's always one of the hardest things to do. And it no one's ever really effectively done it, but we've done it. To now, you have spent all of that goodwill. Now, I would also argue, this is just going to be a changing of, we have to change the way that we think, mm-hmm. because they can lose this game, go on and beat Texas, and everyone's going to still be, do they play Texas? I think they play Oklahoma. But let's say they beat Tennessee, Oklahoma, they win out, mm-hmm. and at 11-1, they're either going to be in the SEC championship game, but they're clearly going to be a playoff team. So let's say that all happens. You can kind of set it aside, but that is going to take some rewiring of fans' brains, because I think you're going to start to see more of these type losses where it's just not going to be as, when you have the top five team against an unranked team, it's just going to be so much more frequent. Like the amount of volatility that we've seen the last 2 or 3 years in particular, it's just gone through the roof, and it's just going to be more of a regular occurrence, but it is going to take some recalibrating of fans.
No, you're right. We should definitely relook at it if you really notice and rewrite our brain. I think the problem is, no matter how, even if Vandy start recruiting better than Alabama, nobody brain will ever feel like Vandy can beat Alabama. And to that coach, it's like you said, he went from being there to here now, and so I haven't listen to Paul Feinbaum this week like I usually in different people. But
the biggest thing, I just found myself wishing, because the Feinbaum show on SEC Network's been kind of neutered and watered down.
Oh.
But if we could have gone old school Feinbaum, the WJOX in Birmingham this week, like that would have been appointment listening. Like I remember they started simulcasting it on Sirius when I was in college. And whenever you'd have like a big Bama or Auburn loss, like I'm in California, like driving around for like 2 hours, just trying to get the Feinbaum show. Cause it was like appointment listening. We just don't have that. But I mean, I'm sure over at SEC Network, it'll still be decent. But I mean, to me, it's like that's kind of like why we watch sports.
Yeah, then I wanted to gauge it too, like, because, you know, here, I feel like we kind of get out of hand sometimes with like the losses. And I know how crazy Alabama do. I hadn't heard much about, and maybe I could have just been clueless over the last couple of days, I haven't heard much about their fans, like, fully against the coach yet. You feel what I mean? And so, and that's one of them losses that can, you know, it ain't life or death, but I'm sure it's some people that's ripped, but I hadn't heard a crazy outroar. But then, like I said, I hadn't listened to Paul and other guys either the last couple of days since it happened.
Well, I think the other thing that kind of helped is that, and it doesn't help Alabama fans, but, like, I was thinking about this. It helped that on the day that you lose, it was a historically insane day of upsets. Like, Tennessee turns right around after you and loses. I also think this is true. I think if you're an Alabama fan, you should be, like, super thankful that that game was on SEC Network rather than being on the 2:30 ABC game. Because imagine, like, if the whole like, there's still plenty of people around nationwide that don't get SEC Network. Like, everyone knew what happened, but, like, it would have been such a bigger deal, I think, if that was instead of had Georgia-Auburn been the SEC Network game at 3:15 and Alabama playing Vandy been the 2:30 ABC game. Like, I think there would have been like break-ins, like people like flipping over, like ESPN flipping over to watch this game and whatnot. Like, I think it would have been it was already a massive deal. I think it would have made it even bigger.
Oh, you're right. The more national. Did you see your coach at Ole Miss, somehow he was able to watch it during his press conference.
So it's funny, my old boss was the one asking him the question.
Oh, okay,
And Lane has got his eyes, like, on a TV. And at first, like, if you just are watching it, you think it's kind of like big leaguing him. But I talked to my boss, he didn't really care. Because, like, that was the whole point. It's like, Lane was like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime moment. Like, he was trying to figure out what's going to happen. Like, the world stopped. You heard Vanderbilt is beating Alabama. Like, the world stopped.
It was that serious. It almost was. I mean, it almost, like you say, you hear Vandy is. You know what's crazy? Somebody put that morning, Jeff, like, I got Vandy today, right? So, I know it's a joke. I'm going to be real with you. Somebody was just saying, I knew it was a joke. And as I'm watching the game, or, you know, I'm reading, I'm leaving a little bit, I'm seeing people like, it's going to happen. And this is the funny thing, and they deserve it. People who went, I know a lot of successful, of course, people that went to Vanderbilt all over the world. When I got on my Twitter and Instagram, they don't usually post number career stuff. They going back to show, they was cheerleaders at Vandy. They was in this geek club. Vanderbilt was proud of my time. Like, we did it. I didn't know y'all had fans that could talk or whatever.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I took the points thinking, okay, Bama's in a prime hangover spot. They had a big win. They were celebrating it. It wasn't, honestly, I think the moment that I thought they might do this, the 4th-and-1, when they ran the play action pass and they threw like the moon ball and the kid catches it like one handed and like kind of bobbles it and secures it. That was the first time I was like, oh, this could be something.
It's their day.
This could be something. All right, we'll talk more football during hour number two, but let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's turn our attention to Tiger basketball. Jason Munn's going to join the program. Tigers have started practice. We'll get his thoughts. He was at Pro Day. Lots to get to with Tiger Hoops. We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This month is Golftoberfest at Birdies. You can book online and enjoy half off standard rates all month long. Also, are you a golf instructor and you're in need of a facility to carry on your lessons through the fall and winter months? DM Birdies on Instagram. It's at Birdies901 for info on how you can start using Birdies as your instructional facility that can benefit both you and your students. Now's the time also to book your holiday party or event at Birdies. Dates are already filling up, so make sure that you can book early. Reserving in October guarantees you Golftoberfest rates, even if your party happens in November or December. Again, follow them on Instagram at Birdies901 for all the latest news and specials. It's also Memphis's number one spot for virtual golf. Golf at birdies.com. Also, for more information, check out the membership options as well. Jason Munns, the Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal on Twitter, on X, at Munsley, joins us each and every Monday on the program. Munns, what are we listening to?
This is You Can Make It If You Try, Jeffrey, by Sly and the Family Stone. It's their version of You Can Make It If You Try.
All right. So I was mentioning to Herd, it is amazing how, and again, if this is a bad look on me, I'll own it. I'll wear it. But when you have a weekend like we did, I just felt like Tiger's opening practice, like it got lost in the wash for me. Like it wasn't like I was ignoring it. It just completely got lost in the wash. But the Tigers did open practice. What are the vibes right now?
I mean, last week we got a look at, it was basically a practice that was sort of dressed up as pro day. There was a handful of scouts in the gym, but it was more or less a practice. Like all the pro day stuff had been done earlier in the week, like all the athletic testing and all the measurements and all that stuff had been done earlier. So, this was basically a practice. And we saw some drills. We saw some 5-on-0, the team going through some different actions and plays and different things without any defenders. And then, of course, there was the scrimmage at the end. And, I mean, as far as the vibe that I picked up, it kind of was more of a focused thing. Like there was nothing that was just dramatic that jumped out at me at least in the time that we were in there. We were in there for a couple of hours. I mean, probably the biggest thing was, during the scrimmage, there was a timeout that was called where the reserves were up like 14-7 or 16-7 or something like that. And the starters called a timeout, and the entirety of the timeout, Tyrese Hunter was really dressing down his teammates. It wasn't mean spirited, and that was probably the biggest. That was probably the biggest, key here for me is that it wasn't like mean spirited. It was very much like old school coaching in a
leadership.
Way. Yes, leadership. And that's not something that we have seen a whole lot of in the last few years outside of, I guess, maybe Kendrick Davis. I talked to Nick Jourdain. I asked Nick Jourdain about this after the practice. I asked him about that moment because it was pretty intense, and I asked him about it, and he was like, that's what Tyrese does. Like this is what he brings to the team among all the other things that he brings. But for him, he pointed out that it's not so much that there is now someone on the team who's willing to call things out. It's that now the team is made up of players who are willing to accept constructive criticism, who are willing to listen to someone like Tyrese Hunter when Tyrese Hunter has something to say. And that part is what's different, according to Nick Jourdain. And so, I mean, there was some other, really good stuff. You saw Dane Danger, showing off his versatility and his just overall ability. I mean, he's not a traditional big. He can handle the ball. He's a good passer. you know, he can do a lot of different things. I mean, Penny even said he's never had a big like Dane Danger, and he's had Precious Achiuwa, and he had, for a brief time, he had James Wiseman, and he had Jalen Duren, but Dane Danger brings sort of a deeper bag than any big that Penny has had. And so, last week was really good to sort of get a feel for what to maybe expect from this team.
Going back to Pro Day, because Cobb was on Thursday, he was on with me, and Cobb was the one that had noted this. Number one, I did not realize that Noah Stansberry is still on the team, but I learned that on Thursday. But the other thing that really stood out was when you looked at the measurables, and granted, I'm doing this by measurables and then clips that you see on social media, I do think what we've seen so far lines up with the narrative that this roster is built more in the image of a roster that Penny wants. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, I think that's absolutely right. It's like when you you can look at the measurables and see that. Like, you can see that he's got a bunch of defensive-minded, guys who, not overly big. You saw in the measurables, like Tyreek Smith is listed at 6'6". You know, there a lot of people were kind of considering that him as a big, as a true traditional big who will probably play more five than anything else. That's not the case. He's 6'6". He's going to play mostly the four. You see things like that. You see things like the point guard, Tyrese Hunter, is the smallest guy on the floor, but he's got the best vertical on the team. And so, you can like piece some of these things together, I think it's completely reasonable on your part to say that this is the exact type of roster that Penny wants. Now, you can also, somebody might could counter that and say, well, the first six seasons of his tenure here have shown that he would probably rather have a significantly deeper roster than what he has now. We've beaten that over the head over the last few years, that he has a tendency to have too many mouths to feed on the team. So, but at the same time, I do think that the makeup of this roster is really molded in the image of the type of team that he wants, the profile of the team that he wants.
You've had a couple opportunities to speak with Penny, you and the assembled media. What are some of the things that you've taken notice of?
So I'm actually literally right now writing a story that's going to publish in the morning that's going to talk about that. So I don't want to give everything away, but
fair enough.
The biggest thing that one of the top things that I have noticed over the last week or however long it's been since Penny started talking to us again, is that he seems to have really dialed in on the game, on the task at hand, on the mission. There's not all this fluff. There's not stuff, he's not talking about all the smoke. He's not talking about, remember what it was last year? It was almost this time last year where he said, our non-conference is our season.
Yeah.
And that really riled some folks up. Well, that he's not saying that. He's actually gone out of his way to say the exact opposite. He pointed out, we talked to him after Pro Day, and I forget what the question was, but his response was basically, we've never won a regular season championship here since I've been here. And he's like, that needs to be our goal. Like, yeah, we want to win. We want to see how we stack up against these very high profile non-conference teams, but our focus, our top priority needs to be winning the regular season American championship, not only because they've never done it, but also because, that I think at the end of the day is probably the most important thing. Like, if you can do that, if you can handle your business in the conferences, if last season proved anything, it's that it really doesn't matter what you do in non-conference. If you don't handle your business in the conference, it's not going to end well for you. I mean, I guess you could probably take that apart and argue that it's not exactly true. I mean, that Memphis could have finished second or third. I forget exactly where they finished, but maybe they could have finished second in the league, maybe even third, and still made the NCAA tournament, as opposed to whatever it was that they finished.
I think they finished tied for fifth or something along those lines.
Yeah, something like that. So maybe there's an argument against that, but because of how well they did in the non-conference, they could have stubbed their toe a couple times and still made the NCAA tournament. But anyway, no, like I think that is my biggest thing from what I've heard from Penny, is that he seems to have a much clearer focus of what it's going to take to and it started all the way back at the beginning of the off season when he got, you know, he built the team early, and then he got everybody on campus in June. You know, last June they had like five guys on campus. Well, this June they had everybody on campus pretty much. So I think that that's really my thing, is the clarity that he is operating with, and just sort of the you know, refreshed sense of what it's going to take to, you know, leave the past in the past and get this thing back in moving in the right direction.
No, I mean, I think that's interesting, because it is one of those things that I think probably, like, that you do have to acknowledge, like, yes, this is year seven. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But you still had an inexperienced college head coach. And like, to me, like, that's, I think that was something that was a legitimate fair criticism, in that we've not seen a team really, other than the Kendrick and DeAndre led teams, like, really, I think, meet their potential during league play. And like, that's going to be something that matters this year. And like, to me, like, that's kind of showing some growth.
It is. I mean, it was something else he said last week, was that, you know, he's learned a lot over his six seasons so far. And, you know, namely, maybe at the top of that is, you know, like, how to manage a program, how to get ahead of potential problems, like making sure that you're prepared if something pops up a month into the season that you're, you know, that you didn't necessarily plan. I mean, like, just basically that, planning for anything and everything that could happen that could potentially derail a good thing, being prepared for that, being ready for that. Like, what am I going to do if the ball is hit to me?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm a third baseman in baseball, like, what am I going to, asking myself that question.
Well, it sounds like the Tigers third baseman would say you blame the grounds crew for not watering the dirt around third base enough.
Yeah. Well, this like him saying that last week, you know, saying I'm learning how to put fires out early as opposed to trying to put them out on the fly. To your point, that's showing some growth and some maturity, and you know, you hope that if you're a Tigers fan, you hope that pays off starting now.
All right, I know this is not necessarily a basketball question, but is there any chatter around the office? We got a hurricane going to hit the west coast of Florida. Mm-hmm. South Florida's already, I believe, canceled all on-campus activity through Thursday.
Right.
Granted, the game is Friday, and it's entirely possible that there is no issue. But what is the latest chatter about, like, what's possible in front of Memphis as they try to play this game on Friday against USF?
So I haven't been to the office today, and
or the group chat or anything, Slack.
I'm telling you, like, this has been an odd Monday. I haven't had any calls or anything with anybody on my side of the fence about anything, much less this. But I have been following, you know, I've been seeing the tweets, and I know they talked to Ryan about it earlier today, and he's saying that they have, you know, that they're monitoring it, and they're exploring all possibilities. I mean, it does sound like the storm is going to have passed by Friday, but I don't know, man. Like,
can you still travel there? Like, yeah, is the airport going to be open? Like, all those questions, I'm sure, matter too, right?
Right, and I get the sense, like, kind of knowing how these things go. I lived right on the Gulf Coast for a long time, or down toward it, and it's like you don't. It's like, yeah, like you can have all these projections and stuff, but sometimes it just doesn't. It doesn't hit the way you think it. You know, people think it's going to, and sometimes it hits the
worse.
It does the opposite. So I get the sense that you're just going to have to. Everybody's just going to have to stay tuned and just be ready to pivot when the time comes to either pivot or not. I genuinely think it's still up in the air. I don't know that there's anything that can be decided right now.
All right, Munns, we appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, Jeffrey.
That is Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Before we take a quick break, Herd wanted to get your thoughts. When you, from what you know about the roster, would, because I know Munns is always, like, how you feel about this roster kind of feels like it's kind of like a beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Some people are very high on it. Munns is one in particular is very high on it. He thinks functionally it is a roster that makes more sense. He didn't feel like it was just thrown together of let's get the best guys that we can and we'll figure the fit out later. He thinks that this roster has a good fit. And he thinks that the pieces work together very well. I'm now kind of like starting to feel pretty optimistic that indeed that's the case. But you know more about the roster. What do you think about it?
I agree. Less is more sometime. And when we go out here and say the roster they have put together, and you know how much I love pinning the staff. Of course, it was some, you know, other guys that went out or whatever. So, but the guys that they got preview with is Kerner, I think is going to make out to be good for his coaching ability, the city, the whole nine.